Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Podcast episode 93. Today I am at Baggett Stadium, actually sitting at Bob Jansen Field, the empty Bob Jansen Field, Cal Poly softball field, with Shotgun Spratling, the man with the coolest name in all of college baseball writing, I guess. maybe the coolest name in a lot of arenas. I don't know. How's it going?
I'm doing well. Nice and beautiful day out here in San Luis Obispo. Looking forward to this rubber match between Cal Poly and Santa Barbara.
Yeah, so I want to know about you a little bit, because you're like probably the most prolific, have probably the most prolific college baseball coverage in Southern California, at least. And Southern California, I'd kind of deem Cal Poly and South, right? Through like San Diego, SDSU, USD. Is that kind of your range?
Yeah, this year I added Santa Barbara and Cal Poly. I've been basically the last 2 years been basically Los Angeles and Orange County. I also make a couple trips down to San Diego as well and out to Riverside. So now it's everything south of Cal Poly. So this is my second trip up here. Love, you know, the drive up. This beautiful drive through the hills and everything on the coast. So I'm enjoying it, especially since both teams are ranked. So that's definitely had Adam for that reason. And it's been fun, you know, covering such a wide range of teams, and it's great for me being I love baseball. I played college baseball myself, and getting the opportunity to see so many different teams, because so many teams from the north and the east come to Southern California in the non-conference season because we always have great weather.
Right.
So I've seen teams like Kent State the year after their trip to Omaha, seen right. Indiana the year before their trip to Omaha. You know, I've seen a ton of teams in the last 3 years, seen Vanderbilt, seen a number of SEC teams, a couple of ACC. Like great teams like this year, looking at teams like Houston that have come out of nowhere and is a team I really think could make a run this year, along with teams like Cal Poly and Santa Barbara who have risen up the ranks the last couple of years.
Right. You said you played college baseball. Where did you play college baseball?
I played college baseball at Maryville College, which is a small D3 school right outside of Knoxville, Tennessee. Division III schools on the West Coast. There's one conference. There's not many actually in the South either. It's mostly concentrated in the Midwest and the Northeast. But you know, it was my last cling of glory, I guess you would say. And thankfully, I got an opportunity. Our senior year, we had been pretty terrible a couple of years in a row. Our senior year, we got a new coach, and we're able to win our conference championship. Nice. And I was actually able to be on the mound for the final out. So that's kind of my crowning glory of my baseball career.
There's no better way to – I mean, if you're a D3 player, generally speaking, that's probably like – that's what you want to do, right? I mean, that's cool. You sound like you're from the South as well. Where are you from?
I'm from Georgia. Okay. But from Georgia by way of Tennessee is what I tell people because of the 4 years I spent there. Yeah. From Northeast Georgia, about if you don't know Georgia, but you know the University of Georgia or you know Atlanta, it's kind of a 45-minute triangle between my hometown, which is Flowery Branch. You know,
Flowery Branch.
People,
what an awesome
people
name.
enjoy that a little bit.
Yeah.
But you know, some good ball there as well, and baseball, basketball. Guys like Micah Owings, who former pitcher in the majors, is a guy I played against in high school and stuff. Uh-huh. Grew up there and then came out here for grad school.
USC. I was going to ask how you ended up out here. You came to grad school at USC.
Yeah, I came out here for grad school for journalism and finished all my classes up 2 years ago and have been, doing a day job so that I can have fun and cover college sports and stuff with freelance and stuff like that with College Baseball Daily. And then I also write for a couple of publications covering USC sports outside of baseball.
Great. So, like, College Baseball Daily is, like, your main gig, right, as far as where you have things like, well, daily a lot of the time. And then you write other places, too. I was going to ask you, what are those other places?
Yeah, I write for College Baseball Daily. I cover this year I've been doing roundups and some game visits that I do depending on how much time I have after a game.
Right.
And I've had a couple of other assignments for other stuff that have been due, so I haven't been able to write too much feature stuff during the week.
Right.
Wrote a couple things earlier in the year, but hopefully I'll be able to have some more time now that I finished up some other stuff, got it out of the way.
Okay.
So I also write for SC Playbook, which is Fox Sports Magazine. It's a quarterly magazine covering USC stuff, and also at USC's SB Nation site, Conquest Chronicles.
Okay.
So you can find my stuff there as well if okay. you're interested in USC.
Yeah.
Anybody up here in the Central Coast that are USC
fans? Yeah, a lot of USC fans up here. Yeah, I mean, we're like the line of demarcation, I guess. There's, I've written about this, and when the Giants won the World Series, they brought their trophy down here, but we're the LA sports media market. So we get, like, Fox Sports Prime Ticket. I grew up on the Lakers, you know, and the Dodgers, and that's, you know, that's who most of the people, well, baseball's now about 50-50, I'd say, but, like, we're, like, mostly Laker fans.
Gotcha.
Even though it's 3.5 hours away, and so, like, you know, Dodger games get blacked out. You know, and we don't have any way to get the Dodgers up here now. Like, I mean, I know a lot of people in L.A. don't either. I wrote something yesterday that, you know, people should come watch college baseball. I mean, it's...
I agree.
It's $14 to come to a game here and get a seat in the first row or something. You know, and it's awesome outside instead of kind of pouting about the majors not being here. You got to get out to a college game.
And if you come up here to... I mean, you're going to get gorgeous views at most of the stadiums in Southern California. Pepperdine has absolutely amazing backdrop with the ocean right behind the outfield. Yeah. But you come here to Cal Poly. I love the Kruko's Corner. You know, if you're a beer drinker, go down there on a Saturday night. You know, pay your I don't know exactly how much the tickets are, but pay it, and it's all you can drink till the seventh inning. So have a good time, get a little rowdy, get on the third baseman a little bit, keep it clean. But you know, have a good time and make sure you have a designated driver and have a you know, come out and enjoy the ball game. I think with Kruko's Corner, you get free drinks, free hot dogs. I mean,
peanuts. Yeah.
I mean, what more could you ask for at a ball game?
Yeah, I mean, I know.
And you compare that, I'm not sure exactly the ticket price, but you compare that to the all-you-can-eat seats at like a Dodgers game, which are like $40, and you're in the outfield, and it's not good seats at all. But it's really good Dodger dogs, I will give you that. Yeah. I've been out there a couple times with all-you-can-eat.
Yeah.
I did have some buddies from Maryville College come out here. We did a road trip that started, we went all-you-can-eat on a Sunday at Dodger Stadium, then we went to Angel Stadium, then down to Petco for a couple days.
Yep.
Had a Hollywood tour day, so I took him everywhere in Los Angeles. It was really cool. We got to have lunch with Louis Zamperini, if anybody knows his story, USC, and the movie, the book Unbroken, and the movie that will be coming out on Christmas. You should check out that story if you haven't. Just an incredible guy. And then we went up Friday and Saturday to San Francisco. But the all-you-can-eat, we had, I think, six guys. And I think we put down, before the game started, I think, 24 hot dogs.
You were just seeing how many you didn't eat all day or something and just trying to see how many.
It was a Sunday game, so it was early. So we woke up a little late after a fun Saturday night. You know, got going.
Yeah, awesome. That's great. How'd you get the name Shotgun?
I actually got the name in T-ball when I was, I don't know, five or six. Uh-huh. And it has stuck ever since. My middle name is actually Michael, which there's three people in my family that call me anything other than Shotgun. Three people in my life.
Okay.
All my professors have always called me Shotgun, all my teachers and stuff. Sometimes it takes a little bit of a grace period with some of them, you know, but besides that.
I imagine the call me Shotgun conversation for some people is like, are you serious for a second? But that's, like you said, it's what you've had for 20 plus years, and so that's what it is, right?
It's what I've had for forever. That's who I am. I mean, like I said, my middle name is Michael, and I believe at one point in like a third or fourth grade class, there were like six Michaels in the class. And I was just like, you can just call me Shotgun. Everybody else does. And it just kind of has grown from there. And it's been my byline ever since I started writing for newspapers and everything. So
that's great.
You know, that's who I am.
I like it. Do you tell anybody your given first name? You keep it to yourself?
I don't tell anyone. It's not a big secret to me, but I just let people, you know.
I like Shotgun.
I like the intrigue of people that think they can figure it out or something, and making guesses and stuff. I'll let you know if you get it right.
With Spratling as a last name, the alliteration's good, too.
Oh, I gotta love some alliteration.
So I read somewhere that you get to like four or five college games a week, at like around there. Sometimes five, maybe like 3 to 4. I don't know. You tell me.
Let's see. Okay, 2 years ago I covered 75 games, and I didn't do any postseason games because at the time UCLA didn't credential our site, and they were the regional host at the time.
Right.
Because Fullerton got sent to Oregon. Uh-huh. 75 that year. I tried to cut it down because I kind of burned myself out towards the end of the season.
I hear you. Uh-huh.
Because One weekend I covered 10 games in one weekend.
Really?
A Thursday through Saturday, Sunday weekend I covered 10 games because I got two triple headers in somehow. I don't even remember how I did it.
But, there must have been like the Dodger Classic or whatever where it was like all at the same place.
Yeah, there was in the preseason and you know there was a couple of tournaments going on, so I got a couple games that way.
Right.
And I think there might have been like potential rain, so they moved a game up. I'm not exactly sure, but. But, yeah, I try to cover, you know, one game a day, at least on the weekend, a Tuesday game most weeks. But I also, a lot of times, I'll go, because in Southern California, you have Pepperdine, you have Northridge that don't have lights. And also you had LMU before this year that doesn't have light, that didn't have lights.
They do now.
They do now. Okay. Brand new this season. Very nice venue there with the lights. But with those schools not having lights, I would go to a 2 o'clock start before daylight savings time, 3 o'clock afterwards, be able to catch a game at Pepperdine, then go down to UCLA for a 6 o'clock start.
And those are close enough that you can drive. Yeah.
Granted, you know, I've had some very bad troubles with traffic at times.
Sure.
You know, one Pepperdine game, one game in particular, went from Pepperdine 2 hour game. Blew by John Moscott. Moscott was pitching for Pepperdine on Friday.
Uh-huh.
It was like a 2-0 game. I was done. The game was over in 2 hours. I was done with interviews and everything in 2.5. I was like, great, I can go down to Long Beach.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're starting at 7 tonight.
Right.
I'm done at 4:30. I was like, I got 2.5 hours. I got plenty of time to get down there.
You got in the car.
I got in the car, drive down there. The 405 was haywire. I get down there and... I got there in the bottom of the first inning.
Well, people don't realize Atlanta's got bad traffic, too. I mean, some of the worst.
Yeah, Atlanta...
I've driven in Atlanta traffic, and it's... I mean, L.A. probably has, like, more of it, but Atlanta's got some roads that are just horrible getting through downtown.
When I tell people about Atlanta traffic, they're like, oh, it can't be as bad as L.A.
Oh,
it's as bad as L.A. or worse during rush hour. However... Atlanta is purely a rush hour traffic, whereas LA, it can be 2 a.m. and you're all of a sudden like, why am I stopping here? Like I've been coming back from Irvine from a game, and Irvine's tricky because you're like, oh, it's just Orange County, it's not that far away, and then you start going, you pass Long Beach, you're like, oh, I'm almost there, and then you pass Fullerton,
like,
you're like,
minutes.
I'm almost there.
Yeah.
You still got 15 minutes to go. You're like, why is it taking so long to get
down
here? But I've left there because I usually do my writing. Some stadiums I do my writing right after the game. Some of them I go home depending on their –
Do you live in like LA?
Previously I lived in the Valley, so
okay.
I was going from the top
close
of
to Northridge.
LA. Yeah, I was up near Northridge before.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Now I stay around the Hollywood area, so
okay.
So
it's pretty central. You got a lot of highways. You can
it helps. It helps a lot being able to bounce back and forth.
What are the best like facilities? Like you've seen them all, obviously at this point, right? And so like you're probably one of the few people that isn't a player who's been to all the facilities or coach who's been to all the places. In your mind, like what are the best places to go to in SoCal? I mean, and you're not bashing the other ones by saying it, but like you mentioned Pepperdine earlier with the ocean being right outside it. There's a NAIA school in San Diego called Point Loma that also has a situation like that where the outfield wall is like almost into the ocean just about. What are some of the best like fields around like as far as the D1
for a fan or a player?
A fan.
For a fan, I mean, Pepperdine's backdrop is so amazing. Like, you got at least go out and check it out. And Steve Rodriguez, their coach, is friends with a number of celebrities and stuff. They've had David Duchovny throw out the first pitch. Chris Carter, also, speaking of X-Files, he threw out a pitch. And those are just two that come off the top of my head because they've done it recently.
Well, and they're in Malibu, basically.
Yeah.
So,
and he makes the most use of that. I mean, Pam Anderson was like a teen mom for them 1 year, basically. I mean, they get some celebrities out there. One of the – Tia and Tamara, one of the sister
– yeah, yeah.
I can't remember their –
Sister-sister.
Sister-sister,
yeah,
yes.
Uh-huh.
One of those – one of the sisters threw out a first pitch just the last weekend.
So they're all about some celebrity out at Pepperdine.
Oh, yeah. So you get the
catering to catering to their Malibu population.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You have celebrities that live out there, and they get them out of the ballpark. And that's awesome, because that's one of the things about Southern California. There's so many people here that are interesting people. You should take advantage of that and get
them
out of the ballpark.
Totally.
You know, it's a big draw for, fans that, hey, I got to see this person that I loved sister when I was a kid growing up or whatever. I'm not sure. But,
how about other, like Fullerton, like some of those places, like, I mean, UCLA, you tell me, I haven't been to any of them.
So Pepperdine is just gorgeous and everything. I love it out there. You also have got to make it down to San Diego and check out Fowler Park. Their brand new stadium, University of San Diego.
USD.
It is absolutely immaculate. It's gorgeous. I love that place. And if you get a chance, if you're a player, you get a chance to go in that locker room. It is ridiculous. The money that they spent, it's a player's paradise right now.
University of San Diego. I went to UC San Diego for college, and so when I was in college, they opened up their gym, Jenny Craig Pavilion. They call it the Slim Gym, and I mean, they do it right there. The architecture was like the same as the rest. You know, it's all like the Spanish style, the same as the rest of the campus. I would imagine the baseball facility is kind of the same deal, where everything just kind of blends in. It looks like it was always meant to be there, and probably really well kept up too.
Yeah, it's a beautiful stadium. I also like San Diego State. It's not as new, but Tony Gwynn Stadium. I really like. The view and everything there, as far as being able to get around the park. Some parks you only can get to certain areas down the lines, but that gives you a pretty good spot. USC, there's so much tradition at Dado Field, with the 12 national championships USC has won. That's a fun place to watch a game. Just don't sit in the press box, because it's the coldest place on campus. I can tell you from experience.
Is it all concrete, basically?
It's all concrete, and it's open air because it was built in, I believe, the 70s or whatever.
Okay.
UCLA, you get some palm trees. You get the backdrop of the city a little bit. Not the greatest view, I would say.
Yeah.
Cal Poly has a great view up here with the mountains and the hills around.
Yeah.
I really like it. And Santa Barbara's not bad. The Santa Barbara's more fun to drive to than necessarily the stadium. It's not too close to the water in that regard.
Right.
But, all the places are really fun to watch a game. I recommend anyone that is a college baseball fan to go to a couple other games other than your favorite team, just to check places out. Or if your team's on the road, drive down to L.A.,
Right.
Get a hotel so you don't have to deal with the traffic. Get it right beside the stadium. Catch a couple games. Irvine has a really nice field.
I drove by Blair Field in Long Beach.
Blair Field.
It's kind of interesting because it's like kind of right in the city there. It's like part of a park. It's not really on campus. So I always wondered, because Long Beach has a great history too.
Yes.
And I always wondered how that played as far as
Actually a city facility.
Right.
So I was talking to Troy Buckley earlier this year, and they've got some ideas in the works about upgrading that facility, and they want to put some money into it. But with it being a city facility, there's some red tape to go through.
Totally.
So I think that place, when they're able to get those renovations done, will be up to the top of the line as well. I love Blair Field, the minor league baseball feel to it. It truly has that, because a couple other stadiums sell beer. USC just allowed it again this year.
Okay.
Cal Poly allows it. But it really feels like a minor league, and the fans there are really like minor league fans. They love their team. They don't really care about the players as much, in particular the individuals, because they come and go every year, but they really love dirtbag baseball.
Yeah, they
do. And plus, you get to say I'm a fan of the dirtbags. Always a plus.
That's a cool nickname for sure. We got Cal Poly and UCSB. UCSB is ranked anywhere between 15 and 25, depending on the ranking you look at. Cal Poly is anywhere between 5 and 10. These are two of the best teams in the area. Are they the two? I'll ask you this way: what other teams are maybe better than these two?
Larry Lee last night told me, and Cal Poly has played UCLA, USC, Cal, and Kansas State, who is a team that a lot of people are high on.
Kansas State was ESPN top five preseason rankings. They were high, man. They were real high. Yeah,
I mean, they are a very offensive club, and I think that team is a team to watch out for in the postseason as well.
Sure.
But when I was talking to Coach Lee last night, he said UCSB is the best team they played this year. So, and I can't really disagree with him.
Right.
Cal State Fullerton, they have great tradition. They come into the season as the preseason number one. They don't play enough defense for me. They don't play enough defense for their head coach. Coach Vanderhook has not been happy with the team. It's cost them a number of games. And he told me a couple weeks ago, he said, until we figure out how to play defense like we're capable of doing, we're going to be a 500 team. We'll win one, we'll lose one. And that's pretty much what they've been, over the last month and a half or so. I think they're 14-11 or something like that now.
And rankings-wise, they've just kind of got the benefit of the doubt, because everybody knows how good their Friday starter is. Everybody knows how good, talent-wise, they're there. But they're not doing it. And at some point, as I was talking to Aaron Fitt a couple weeks ago, and he said his rankings over the course of the year, beginning of the year, they're kind of more based on potential, and they kind of slowly shift over the course of the year to performance. And Fullerton, their performance is, like you said, around a 500 ball club. Now, they don't play slouches either, but yeah, their performance is around a 500 ball club so far.
Yeah, Fullerton always plays a really tough schedule. Long Beach State, I think at one point this season, I know they had the toughest schedule. I mean, yeah, they started the season with Vanderbilt, right, which was, you know,
who's a top three.
Yeah, team. They're probably, yeah, the best team I've seen this year, okay. Vanderbilt. I mean, that pitching staff is just remarkable. They're bringing, right, guys that are 92-plus out of the pen just – one after another, after another, after another. They're just ridiculously deep as far as their pitching. Yeah. And that's kind of how Fullerton is. I mean, I was saying yesterday, Kobe Ghana is their setup guy. Uh-huh. I mean, he started a couple games throughout his career. He's probably on their staff right now, probably the fifth or sixth starting pitcher, where on any other team in the Big West besides Cal Poly or UC Irvine, he'd be their Friday night guy.
Okay.
I mean, he's that good, I think. Uh-huh. Granted, I haven't seen Austin Pettibone pitch for UC Santa Barbara in the last couple of years, so I don't.
But he lasted four innings the other night.
You know, he's coming off an injury, so I haven't got a chance to see him. But Kobe Ghana is that good. That's how deep their pitching staff is, and that's why they were so good last year. Right. And they had veteran guys that could produce runs, and they were winning all the close games, whereas this year their defense is letting them down. They're not getting the clutch hits, and they're not. Now, granted, Fullerton, you know, Coach Vanderhook, I got a lot of faith in him that he's going to get it fixed.
They'll figure it out at some level, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, one of the players told me last month when they had lost a game, or a couple weeks ago, I guess, to Long Beach State. Uh-huh. I asked him, what's the biggest difference between this year and last year? And he said, Carlos Lopez. Now, Carlos Lopez was a fifth-year senior, you know, wasn't a guy that, you know, crushed the ball. He wasn't a 15-homer guy or anything like that. He was no Chris Bryant. Uh-huh. However, he was his steady leadership. He said he was the best diffuser I've ever seen because Rich Vanderhook is known for his gruff style of coaching.
Oh, fiery.
He's fiery. He will tell players, you know, when they do wrong, and he expects it to be done right. Right. And I can respect that completely. I love the coaches that are like that because I'd much rather have that type of coach than somebody that's, you know, patting me on the back 24/7.
Right.
But he said that Carlos Lopez was able to come and put his arm around guys and able to, you know, soothe that confidence back into them. Be like, right, you know, see what he's doing and point out what Coach Vanderhook was saying,
right,
in a calmer way,
right,
that people were understanding.
Right.
And they haven't had a guy that has been able to do that so far this year. So
that's
if somebody develops into that role,
right,
you know, that leadership role, then maybe, you know, that's the thing that turns around Fullerton,
right,
and make this a huge race because this Big West is really deep this year. I've had a couple, three or four coaches that have either hinted at or flat out said that they think that the Big West is better than the Pac-12 this year.
That was going to be my next question. I mean, is it deeper than the Pac-12? I mean, you've seen at one point the Big West record was like, I don't know, like 12-3 against the Pac-12 or something along those lines early in the season in head-to-head matchups. And I mean, I know there's the Oregons that are really good. I know that, you know, Washington's always solid. I know Arizona State, I think, is having a decent year. Washington just swept USC. I saw that was surprising. USC's kind of gone in the tank in conference, I think. But
yeah, USC's struggled recently. They started off really hot.
Yeah.
Washington has been on fire. They have played so well recently. They are a team that wasn't expected to compete for the Big 12. I mean, the Pac-12 title, but they are a team that's going to be there at the end. You know, what's going to come down for them is their final two series are at Oregon State and at home against UCLA, I believe.
Okay.
I know it's those two teams.
Yeah.
I can't remember which one they have. One on the road. But that's going to be – possibly that could be what determines who wins the Pac-12.
So Oregon, so is the Big West deeper than the Pac-12 or better than the Pac-12 this year?
You know, it's very close.
Is it at least a toss-up?
Yeah, I would say it's a toss-up. The one thing is how deep are the conferences? I'm not sure. At the top end, you've got at least three teams in the Big West with Fullerton and these two teams here, Cal Poly and UC Santa Barbara. Long Beach State is a team that's going to be competitive every game.
Yeah.
They're pitching – I don't even know how many guys they've lost right now.
Right.
Yesterday, Josh Fry, who was probably their seventh starter leading in the fall, he was probably their seventh starter on the depth chart.
Okay.
He's their Saturday guy right now because they lost their Friday guy before the season, Jake Stassi, to Tommy John. They're missing what they started with on Friday and Sunday, Jason Alexander and who's their Friday guy? I'm blanking on the name right now. But they're missing two guys, Nick Sabo.
Uh-huh.
Those two guys, this is their second week in a row missing with some elbow issues, I believe, for both of them. They're hoping that both of those are just minor temporary things.
Because Long Beach has kind of been a kind of a dark horse in my mind before the injuries, at least, kind of all year, as far as maybe somebody sneak into a regional and do some damage.
You know, they're right around 500, but the fact they played such a tough schedule and the fact that they're able to, they're still being able to compete, you know, with a guy who was their sixth or seventh guy. Right. And he pitched yesterday, he pitches against UCLA, he combines for a 3 or 4 hit shutout to beat the Bruins. I mean, that team is they're going to be a competitive every game. I don't even know how many one-run games they've been in. Probably like two-thirds of their games have been one-run, two-run games. And their middle of the lineup has finally stepped up this season. So they're a team to watch out for. And UC Irvine, you know, they've got good pitching. They don't have much hitting, but they have Taylor Sparks and Connor Spencer in the middle, and those guys can produce a lot of runs.
Okay. And you know, one thing about Cal Poly, and Brian Granger's pitched 4 innings the last couple of days, and one thing that I wrote about was just pitching depth. Last year in the regional at UCLA, you know, after Wagman and Imhoff, you know, it was just kind of like you're going to get what you're going to get. And when you play four games in 4 days or 3 games in 3 days or 3 games in 2 days or however that ends up working, you know, when you play a lot of games in a short period of time, you got to have a deep bullpen when those games are like do or die or something. How important is that kind of pitching depth? And is a performance like Granger's really something? I mean, for me, I like lock onto that and I say to myself, you know, that's a guy that they're going to need with two out of the 4 starting pitchers that they've been using this year being freshmen. A guy like Granger who can come out and either give long relief or if they decide to, you know, take one of those freshmen out of the rotation right now, either Lee or Calamani, you know, that you have a little bit of flexibility at least without compromising your setup and closer in Riley and
Taylor Chris.
I want to say Trevor John, who's a Cal Poly basketball recruit. And Taylor Chris. So how important is that depth in terms of that?
I mean, the depth is really important. That's why a team like Fullerton is going to be always going to be dangerous.
That's what I'm saying.
Because
there's
so many arms on that team.
Yeah.
And that's the big question about a team like Long Beach State, because they've brought up that guy that was the sixth or seventh guy, and now he's in the rotation. You know, if they have to get, you know, use a couple guys on a Friday, you know, a Friday starter, you know, doesn't pitch well, and you have to use a couple guys for 2 or 3 innings, you know, what's the rest of the weekend going to be like? Do you have enough guys?
Right.
And
Larry Lee said he doesn't want to use Chris and Riley on the same day because of that.
Exactly the thought I was about to express. No problem. You know, that's the one thing. You know, those two guys have been so good for him. And I asked him yesterday, I was like, is Taylor Chris your most important pitcher on the team? And he's hemmed and hawed. He didn't want to say yes, but he definitely didn't say no. You know, he's definitely up there.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest development in this Cal Poly staff has been Casey Blomquist. I mean, he has been absolutely tremendous this year. And last year, it was him and Brian Granger kind of back and forth for that Sunday role.
Totally.
And he's completely taken that over. And he's given them a solid second guy, with the Saturday being, you know,
In between.
Both Justin Calamini and Slater Lee have looked great at times this year.
Yeah.
When they're pitching on Tuesdays, or Slater Lee at the very beginning of the year when he started out.
When
he shut out UCLA and pitched well against Kansas State as well.
Yeah.
And then I saw him against – I was really excited to see him. I want to see what this freshman's got. I see him against USC, and he gets absolutely rocked.
That was the first game that he got rocked. Yeah. He went to Seattle and got rocked again and kind of got as Cal Poly had some weird games, he got kind of put back in the weekdays. The game's getting close here, so I just have like a couple of more questions. One is about like type of media that that you use, and on my side, I try to, like, you know, take pictures, write about stuff, kind of do it all, I guess. And there's not a lot of people that do that. And you also do video, and you post video on your YouTube channel. And I think, you know, if reporters or if media people are going to keep up with the way that media is going nowadays, I think that's just like such an important thing. Can you talk about like how that's developed as far as you posting your post-game interviews on YouTube, taking pictures and posting them within your posts, you know, as far as a nightly roundup, and how important is that in terms of what people want to see out there?
You know, I try to there's such a diverse different people like different things, different people learn different ways, you know, people are just different overall.
Yeah.
So I try to give a little bit of everything. I like taking photos because, you know, I can throw it up on my Instagram later and, you know, I think it tells, you can tell a lot more of the story with a photo a lot of times.
I agree.
And, you know, I like, I do the video interviews because, for one, it's easier for me to, you know, take it and have that downloading and uploading in the background while I'm writing all my other stuff than me having to transcribe everything at the same time. So, and it gives people a sense because, as personally, I like to hear an entire interview because sometimes quotes can
you can pick and choose a quote if you want to.
Sometimes.
I used to like to watch when I was a kid, and they'd like flash up a, you know, I don't know, when Phil Jackson first started coaching the Lakers, or when, you know, they'd go to the locker room and talk to somebody after the game for 5 minutes. You know, there used to be like that kind of thing where I could do my own analysis as the consumer or the fan. I sometimes like less analysis and more just like having an opportunity to look at the whole product myself and see, like, was the Cal coach really mad? That was the other time you were up here, I think, right? When Cal was in town?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, was the Cal coach like really upset about the errors that they made that led, you know, how was his demeanor in that direction? You know, what does Larry Lee look like when he's talking about something that's really frustrating to him versus something that he's really happy about? You know, like, how does he keep his poker face up? You know, even with the media. And I think that those are the types of things that, as a fan, I really kind of, those details are really important to me. And I'd like to see those things sometimes more than, you know, kind of more traditional kind of where I'm picking quotes and I'm kind of writing my story you know, that's something that I always, you know, I giving people the option is a good thing, like you said.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I can, a lot of times when I'm writing, because I'm a better writer than I am anything else, in my own opinion.
Uh-huh.
But so when I do my feature articles and stuff, I think I can mold the quote,
sure,
you know, into the narrative to make it better understood,
right,
and to make it to make it a better story.
Right.
Whereas sometimes when I talk to Larry Lee is a guy that will talk for a little while with each answer. Uh-huh. And the same thing with like Dan Hubbs, Troy Buckley. Dan Hubbs, I can ask at USC, I can ask him. I had 6 minutes left on my camera the other the last game I covered him.
Yes.
I asked two questions. That was it. And I got cut off in the middle of the second question.
That's awesome.
I mean, some coaches are like that. Other, you know, sometimes I'll interview freshmen. Coaches are definitely going to give you more than players.
A freshman will give you like a minute.
I mean, David Fletcher from LMU, their stud shortstop. You know, so especially with college baseball, because they don't get a ton of media attention. Mm-hmm. Now, some guys in Southern California do, but you compare that to with like a guy who's been on the AAU circuit or something that's a big time recruit for basketball. He's been interviewed by a ton of people over and over. And what happens is experience makes players better with at interviews that. And
uh-huh.
stuff.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So, you know, you have an experienced coach, they're going to be a lot better and stuff like that. So, you know, sometimes, you know, those long interviews, they can be boring or something. But you can't necessarily find what the big thing is. So if I pull it out and put it in context, you know, it's a lot better for some people, you know, reading it that way. But then also, like you said, you know, a lot of times it's fun to see, you know, how the transition, how they get to a certain quote. Because sometimes there's a build-up to it that you don't...
They're contextualizing it.
Exactly. Yeah. I can't write, you know, if I'm pulling a quote, I can't write four sentences from a guy and put it in there. But so I might use the most important
sometimes
part of
that. I do. Because I have my... And that's kind of an interesting thing, too, as far as my writing goes. And it's maybe something I'm kind of, like, just becoming consciously aware of this year. Is like, I have my own site, so like I do what I want, kind of thing. And so, like, not to be Eric Cartman about it, but you know, whatever, I'll do what I want, kind of the quote there. But I sometimes just say, you know what, this is a super good quote, and people who read my stuff, if they're Cal Poly fans, might want that whole thing. And so, and I'm on the internet, so it's not like it's getting printed. And so, like, sometimes I will, and I'll like, you know, I'll indent it or whatever, and do the thing there. But. I feel like there's so many more kind of options in that direction nowadays, right?
Definitely, with online, there's a lot more options with stuff like that. I was thinking in my head, I was thinking more of like magazine style
features, articles,
because you don't want to mess up the flow of the piece completely.
No, not at all.
By dropping in a whole paragraph.
Not at all.
From a guy.
That's right. That's
but
exactly
on the
right.
internet, you can you know move a indent it in and block quote something like that, and that works great.
Totally.
Because you know that sets it off, and usually a lot of guys give you know, those paragraphs often are filled with a bunch of stuff.
Right.
And that's what makes it hard sometimes, pulling out which quote you want to use, right, and stuff like that.
We're a couple of weeks into conference season, and so last question is going to be, who is Shotgun Spratling's sleeper team at this point in the season, who's going to kind of make a run and make a regional run and maybe even be kind of dangerous in regionals from Southern California? So I guess you're talking about California teams in the West Coast Conference, the Mountain West, the Big West,
and the
Pac-12, right? So I guess UCLA, USC. I'll leave Stanford and Cal in there for you, too, if you want.
Granted, I haven't seen Stanford play. I mean,
they seem like they're one of those.
They're a team that, I mean, sneaky. They played a really, especially coming in the season, looked really tough schedule on paper.
Right.
And they've got three freshmen in the starting rotation. Okay. If not, I know they have two.
Okay.
You know, those guys are only going to get better.
Right.
The question with when you have freshman guys, now last year Fullerton ran the same thing, and it wasn't an issue. When you have those freshman guys, because they had Eshelman and Garza at the front.
Right.
Do they run into a wall when they get 30 games into the season?
Right.
Because that's about the length of a high school season. Now, a lot of times,
the next couple weeks.
Yeah, you'll see that, you know, about midway through the conference season, the last bit, you know, guys fall off. And that happened a little bit with Granger last year. Mm-hmm. You know, it happens to different guys. It happens a lot more with fielders than pitchers, I think, because it's more of a grind for fielders.
With 3.5-4 hour games.
But just the fact that you're not used to, your body's not used to playing that long,
right,
and you've got so much more taxing on your mind and your body,
yeah,
with college and everything the first year.
Yeah.
So sometimes your freshmen run out of that wall and you see them just drop off.
Right.
Other times you see them turn the corner and make that transition, especially a lot of times it starts at the beginning of conference season, you know, that second season for them.
Right.
Are they able to build off of what they learned in the preseason? And guys like Quantrill at Stanford are guys that I expect to do that. So Stanford could be a team to definitely do that. If Long Beach State can get in and if they get healthy, you know, that's a team that I think is just they're so scrappy that they're dangerous,
right,
because they're so used to playing tight games,
right,
that they can win them.
Uh-huh.
And then of course Cal State Fullerton, because I think they can turn it on.
Well, and they're still like in top 25 in some people's rankings. I mean, or they were last week or something. Yeah,
they might fall out this week after losing the first game to UC Davis, but you know, even though they struggled, they haven't lost many series.
Right.
The only two series they've lost have been on the road. They lost at Wichita State last week, tight series.
Yeah.
And then they also lost on the road at Baylor. So two.
And then they've lost some like random midweek games too.
You don't see them like they never get swept.
Right.
I mean, when you got guys like Eshelman,
when you got Eshelman,
Eshelman's ridiculous.
I can't wait to see Eshelman Imhoff. I think that's going to be here. That's going to be a fun Friday
night.
Should
be that's actually going to be a Thursday night,
Thursday night.
Because it's going to be Easter weekend.
Okay, there you go.
So that's going to be a great game. Hopefully Garza's back by then. He's missed, I believe, 3 or 4 weeks now.
Yeah.
He's supposed to come back this week. They're giving him one more week.
Okay.
But when you got a guy like Phil Bickford, the number 10 overall pick in last year's draft, who doesn't sign, that you can just throw into the rotation, that's a depth of wealth there.
Yeah.
And the funniest part about that situation was that Toronto picks him.
Uh-huh.
And this is the rich getting richer, the poor getting poorer. USC has Rowdy Tellez get picked by Toronto in the late, like 36th, 38th round, something like that.
And he goes.
And he had a number set that he wasn't going to sign for. That's why he dropped. He's a top 3 round talent.
Right.
So he drops. But he ends up signing because of the money that Toronto has left over. Doesn't sign. So he doesn't end up getting the number he wants, and it baffled some of the USC coaches. They're like, why would you take this amount now?
Yeah.
But like 45 minutes before the deadline, he calls up the coaches and like, coach, I think I'm going to sign. Like, what?
That's crazy.
What just happened here? But that's the rich getting richer, the poor getting poorer. And that's the craziness of recruiting in college baseball. It's so hard to fathom how these coaches do it, because you're not only battling against, hey, is this guy going to go in the draft? Could potentially happen. Is he going to sign? How much scholarship do I give him? Because you can't give out – you don't just give out full rides like you do in football and basketball.
Right, you can give partial stuff.
11.7 scholarships for a 25 to 30-man roster. I mean, it's – you know, and there's very few guys that get full rides. So
is that the limit, 11.7?
11.7 is as many scholarships as baseball is allowed to give total.
That's so crazy.
So some guys may get, you know, like 5% or something, but other guys,
or 25%,
and that's how you get guys like David Berg at UCLA. He's a walk on, came in as a walk on, all American. You know,
you give somebody. I mean, you choose to give somebody like
I mean, I don't know what anybody's on at Cal Poly, but like somebody like Imhoff might be worth a whole scholarship.
Yeah. So at that level, and right? the question is though, you know, is this guy? You see these studs in in high school. Richard Prigatano at Long Beach State has really developed into a great player this year.
Uh-huh.
They expected him to be able to contribute right away. I don't know the scholarship numbers at all.
Right.
But I was just guessing that he would get a larger portion than a number of other freshmen.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he struggled his first 2 years.
Yeah.
He's really turned it on this year, and that's been one of the keys for them.
Right.
But if you give a guy money, you know, and he doesn't produce, you're losing out like that.
Right.
USC had a guy, Kyle Richter, a left-hander, who just lost his ability to throw strikes. And
right.
he was a guy that they thought he started the season. Right. I mean, his freshman year as a Tuesday guy, they thought, and a reliever, they thought he was a guy that was going to be a front-of-the-line rotation guy.
Right.
And he's ended up having his career got cut short with them. But, you know, he was a guy that they expected. So if they've got scholarship money invested, if those guys don't produce, you're in the hole.
Well, that's like David Armendariz, I think, that kind of maybe went into that situation too in terms of like anticipating. This is a guy who's going to have a good year. He's going to get drafted. I'm going to go get Zach Zahner from Santa Barbara City College. I have my scholarships kind of lined up. Armendariz doesn't have a great year last year. You know, he's down at Pomona now.
Exactly.
For his senior year. When he was, I mean, if you would have talked to somebody after, you know, his freshman or sophomore year, you would have said, this is a guy who's going to get drafted in the top 15 rounds after his junior year and be, you know, and he's not going to be around at Cal Poly anymore. And he's not around at Cal Poly anymore, but he's completing his career down south.
I mean, that's what makes it so difficult in college recruiting, because you have to plan for guys that are leaving. You got to plan for guys that are going to get drafted. Can we? Recruiting has gotten so far in advance now.
Right.
With UCLA getting guys for what class? 2014 is the year right now. Uh-huh. Is the class up? They're getting guys in 2017, 2018 classes. So
we're already saying they're going to go there.
Yeah, they've already committed. I mean, you don't sign the scholarship or anything like that. But those guys are committed already.
Right.
You mean, if you're looking at 14-year-old kids and you're like, all right,
how is this guy going to project?
He's a lefty and he's throwing 82 now. Is by his senior year, is he going to be throwing 90? I mean, is that what we're projecting?
It's like scouting.
I'm telling you, I am baffled by these coaches and their ability to recruit right now and put it all together with the scholarships being what they are. It's just, I find it amazing. Yeah. I find it one of the most difficult things in college sports at all.
Awesome. Well, shotgun Spratling with that. I hear the game starting over there, so we're going to go over and get to the UCSB Cal Poly game Sunday afternoon. It's a rubber match.
Rubber match should be fun.
Yeah.
Coach Checkets from UC Santa Barbara said, well, we just hope we get out within 5 hours today.
Awesome. Well, we hope so, too. Thanks a lot, Shotgun. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue.